as I said, it's time for the panel, and I think from last night's rather inconclusive national minimum wage debate, we're going to talk about something that's far more conclusive in its findings, and that's all about cities and growth. How do we grow faster, more inclusively, and more sustainably? From, I think, Uruk in 3700 BC to Babylon in 675 BC, Troy in 1250, any of the great cities today, the story of humanity is tied to the story of great cities. But I think never before have cities been the engines of growth and the architects of transformation. It's a conversation that is being driven on the global level by the World Economic Forum, which hosted its Global Cities Forum in October, at which it revealed that by 2030, 60% of the world's population, that's almost two-thirds, is expected to live in mega cities. That's just around the corner. And how all those people live and what their lives are like will really depend on the important choices that our leaders make today and in the coming years. So what choices are we making about our cities here in South Africa, and how is urbanization being harnessed for growth? It's a topic that has been extensively researched by the Centre for Development and Enterprise, and it's a real pleasure to welcome Executive Director of the Centre, Anne Bernstein, to the panel tonight. Thanks for joining us, Anne.
Good evening. Pleasure to be with you.
And also on the line, I've got Sithole Mbanga, CEO of the South African Cities Network. Thanks very much for joining us, Sithole.
Thanks very much. Good evening. I wonder, can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you clearly. Are you struggling to hear us?
No, I was just checking.
Fantastic. No, line is pretty good. So wherever you are, that infrastructure is still working. And just contextualize the city as an economic driver. Why are they such important agents of economic output?
Well, to put it very simply, people come to cities and agglomerate and they live much closer to each other. Ideas are generated that way, and it's much easier to learn very quickly from people nearby. So if you think of dispersed rural settlements, how hard it is to communicate or to learn from each other. Cities have historically been places where lots and lots of people congregate and ideas are in the air, and this one has this idea and you change it and so on and so forth. So, and around the world, it's almost an economic sort of rule that as countries urbanize, so their economic growth rate increases. It's not guaranteed, but that's certainly been the experience in very, very many places.
Well, I suppose reasonable logic would dictate that with that density comes innovation, comes ideas. It also helps deliver services because you're not delivering to a vast sprawl. It's all concentrated in one area.
Yeah, you get much more better return on your investment in cities. It's cheaper to deliver services and infrastructure, and it's easier to get things to happen. So we're really arguing that all the evidence indicates that South Africa's future is urban. It's time to accept this unreservedly and stop our ambivalence about urbanization and focus a great deal more attention on how we can harness the dynamics of expanding cities and urbanization so as to create much higher growth, employment, and opportunities for all those millions of South Africans who are left behind and excluded, as well as all those of us who have jobs and who are looking for a better deal.
Yeah, and it's part of your growth agenda series of papers that you've produced as the CDE. Very interesting, very easy to digest, runs to, what is it, just over 20-odd pages. And we'll get into some of the meat and detail, because there's certainly policy decisions that policymakers have made since the dawn of democracy that haven't panned out the way they should have. In fact, in some instances, they've really just entrenched the apartheid spatial legacies. So we really need to be critical of the kind of policy drivers and how we've wound up here. But Sipho, I want to bring you into the conversation here, and just to talk to me about firstly what the South African Cities Network is all about, because you produce some fantastic research, particularly around our major metros.
No, thank you very much, Sipho, not Sipho.
Sorry, Sithole, did I call you Sipho? Sorry.
No, don't worry. I think, first and foremost, I think it's important for me to also commend the effort that the Center for Development Enterprise embarks upon. I mean, the current series of work that they're doing surely contributes to the debate. And similarly, in the Cities Network, through many various other publications, we argue the same, that it is quite important for us to differentiate between the types of municipalities and identify the fact that whereas cities are the engines of growth, they cannot do that alone. So you also need a developing rural area that enhances quicker how a city grows and therefore how a city contributes to economic development, as it were. So that it shouldn't be an either-or, you know. It should be about both. As we develop cities, cities must develop and contribute to the economy for purposes of developing your semi-rural, your semi-urban, and in fact some of your deep rural areas. We shouldn't only punt one side of the agenda. It's quite important for those to develop in tandem together.
Now, hearing that, what rates of urbanization are we experiencing in South Africa? I've seen your research tends to indicate that by 2050, we're going to have 80% of the population living in cities.
In terms of the Integrated Urban Development Framework, which is a policy instrument that government, in particular the Department of Cooperative Governance, has put together for South Africa to discuss, and it helps us understand better the trends in urbanization. The predictions are that South Africa by 2050 will be anything between 65 and 70% urban. So it's quite phenomenal. I think there is nothing new about urbanization itself, particularly after the Industrial Revolution. But the difference is that this time, this urbanization is taking place at a fairly unprecedented rate. You know, it's much faster, and it's taking place over a very short space of time, which is why there is merit in what my colleague Anne is saying, that we have to be conscious, first and foremost, that urbanization is taking place. Number two, we have to accept that it is taking place. And number three, we then have to ensure that the geographies, in other words, the municipalities where that are experiencing this urbanization, have sufficient skills and capacity to manage urbanization, because it's not the kind of thing that you can police.
And you, in the policy documents, say that we mustn't neglect rural economies, but they don't have the ability, considering our agriculture sector and the way it shed jobs over the last few years, to really be the drivers of growth, do they?
No, look, agriculture is at about 2-3% of GDP. So should our rural sector be much more effective? Absolutely. Should South Africa have a rural development strategy? Yes, of course. We've never had one. We've done terrible things to rural people. We need a rural development strategy. I'm the first one in the queue to discuss more effective land reform, tenure arrangements, communal tenure, all sorts of issues that are quite difficult for South Africans to grapple with, and we should deal with them. But the priority for the country is where already 60% of all economic activity takes place in our largest cities, and employment levels are much higher in the metros than anywhere else. About 60% of net jobs were created in 1996 to 2011, and urban incomes are four times higher than rural incomes. And we know that the dynamic is clear. More and more people are moving to the cities and are being born in cities. So South Africa should stop hovering. We need to say the cities and the surrounding regions, but the cities are the drivers of growth in our economy, and what powers, resources, and accountabilities need to change in order to deal with this in the most effective way. And we must stop talking about local government or generally. We've got to differentiate much more the biggest cities that are absolutely central to South Africa's economic and, frankly, its political future.
And by that, you're looking at the region. So Gauteng, we've got Johannesburg, Pretoria, Ekurhuleni and surrounds, Western Cape, Cape Town and surrounds, and KZN, Durban, Pietermaritzburg and surrounds. Those are really the three areas that generate most of our GDP already. Let's start with the spatial issues. And those seem to have been the most difficult to transform from that apartheid past of dormitory townships outside of the urban centres. Why have these been so stubborn and difficult to remove? And what policies have we implemented that have actually led to their stickiness?
Look, South Africa inherited a terrible legacy from apartheid, and both in rural and in urban South Africa. And it's easy to say we must deal with it, but it is a difficult legacy. We're saying that the housing policy we chose, where we've delivered some 2 to 3 million houses, has not been the right approach. Because of the cost of land, a lot of those new housing settlements have been put at the peripheries of cities or towns, and often in places where there is no economic opportunity. So instead of densifying our cities, we've increased the sprawl of our cities. And this makes it very difficult for poor people to get access to all sorts of opportunities, especially economic opportunities. So that's been a real problem, and our housing policy has to change. Not only is it increasing the sort of segregated, sprawling nature of our cities, but it's completely unaffordable. The Financial and Fiscal Commission, for example, estimates we're going to need four times the current budget to meet our commitments by 2020, 800 billion rand. Oh. This is the wrong approach. We're putting too much money into individual houses and households. It's not working. We put far too little money into bulk infrastructure and public infrastructure, which we desperately need, both to maintain existing infrastructure, but also to expand our infrastructure. So that's one big area where we have to change policy quite dramatically.
So Tolu, what does it cost municipalities to deliver low-cost housing?
Well, the subsidies are given.
Sorry, I addressed that to Sitoli.
Okay.
Sorry, Sitoli.
No problem. So I don't have the actual figures with me, but I think, as Anne is saying, it is quite a huge sum of money. Part and parcel of the ingredient, just to come back to the question you were asking earlier, what is it going to take for us to be able to achieve the objectives of spatially transforming South African cities and providing spatial justice, so to speak. And by spatial justice, we are essentially referring to a situation where everybody in the city, in the geography of the city, has access to places of play, to places of work, also to places of life in a very equitable manner. You require land. That's why it's not just about how the human settlement policy is designed or not designed, or how the implementation thereof takes place or not. There is an important ingredient called land, which, as part and parcel of the inheritance that Anne is referring to, was as a bad inheritance. The manner in which we have inherited, the type of land patterns, land ownership patterns we have, require that all stakeholders, and here we're talking about the private sector, I think in particular, I think there's a big lobby group in the South African property owners who are big owners of property, land included. You're talking about the public sector, especially your municipal, your national and your local government. But you're also talking about civil society. There's this big, call it CODESA equivalent, that we need to have honestly, without having parochial interest, but having the interest of the long term at heart, where we say, what are we going to do with the limited land in order for us to be able to achieve this spatial justice that we're talking about?
And land is a very important issue, and one can't spatially reconfigure cities without having access to pockets of land in which to do that. I know in Johannesburg, for example, there are various initiatives to try and get property developers to offer low-cost housing in many of the abandoned buildings. The Trust for Urban Housing Finance, Tuft, does some fantastic work there. But what do you make of the land conundrum that we're faced with when it comes to spatial redevelopment?
Look, there's some very important issues. Firstly, we need the municipalities, national departments, and the state-owned enterprises to release more land. We need to know what land is owned where, and we need to think about the best possible strategies for these. It's still not known exactly how much land there is, but there is a lot of publicly owned land that is not being effectively utilized within the cities. So that's one issue. The second is that in urbanizing countries, you have to plan ahead. You have to say, we know the population is growing. We know that more people are coming, and most of them are going to be poor. Let's buy land, let's find land, and let's plan ahead so that you don't have to get involved in the difficult business of in-situ upgrading of already existing informal settlements. Now, we're in favor of doing that for the informal settlements we have. We need to upgrade them. We need to regularize them. We need to give people security. And that's vitally important. But we also need to grow our rental market. There are lots of homeowners in Alex, in Soweto, and elsewhere who are becoming landlords. They're creating shacks on their properties, and they're renting them out to people at a price people can afford. This is a good thing. And we need to look at how we ensure that we expand our infrastructure to support this. So we need to think much more creatively about housing in ways that densify the city. You know, we need to think much more about building cities, not houses. So it's a new way of thinking about this. And, of course, land is important, but I don't think we should go on and on only about the private sector landlords. But we also need to look at who owns land in our cities that's publicly held and that could be fairly quickly and easily utilized.
Sotole, I would like to move off the land issue. It's very important. We could probably spend another 3 hours debating the land issue, but there are various other elements that I'd like to discuss, starting with city infrastructure as well. Because if you look at the spending on our city infrastructure, judging by our stormwater drains, which every time we have these extremely violent thunderstorms up in Gauteng in particular, there seems to be some or other flood, traffic lights down, parks, well, we'll probably give a 6 or 7 out of 10, perhaps. There has been a lag in spending on infrastructure. A lot of that infrastructure built in the 70s and 80s, so needs to be upgraded right now. What are the challenges, and why are we not using this to harness another growth wave, much like the Trump infrastructure plan in the US?
Well, in part, and again, I want to say Anne is correct when she says we shouldn't be talking only about public land, rather about privately owned land, but we should also talk about publicly owned land. So I agree we have to look at the entire basket of land availability and have a clear set of objectives about what we want to utilize that land for, including, therefore, how we put that infrastructure. Because if you do not have an understanding of how much land you have in order to develop and accommodate the population that's coming to live in those cities, you are also unable to plan very thoroughly about what to do and how to put in place your infrastructure. So that's the first problem that I think generally municipalities have. The second issue is also about the maintenance of the infrastructure, whether it is this infrastructure that was laid historically in the olden days or the infrastructure that you are having now. The cost of maintaining that infrastructure are not clearly accommodated or sufficiently accommodated in the respective financial models that many of the municipalities have, in part because there isn't sufficient resources, financial resources, for them to be able to put aside those monies in order that they're able to maintain that infrastructure in the future. Because there's a lot of competing needs. I mean, on the one hand, you have 10 rands, which you can spend on maintaining infrastructure in the future so you don't fully utilize that money, and yet there's a competition for sanitation or whatever the case might be, any other competing need that society has. So it's a plethora of those types of programs other than just planning, and the fact that you plan not having a full understanding of what you have. It's also about how it is that you're going to finance the infrastructure that you're going to put in place.
And Sithole, a very important point there is cities' debt collection ability is abysmal. We're just not manning up when it comes to collecting on what's due to our cities, Anne.
You see, the problem is that if you think about it, I mean, there's a lot of retrofitting that we are doing, and retrofitting is not sustainable. That's why I'm saying the starting point is for us to have a consensus about what it is exactly that we want to do in a very practical way, and commit all of our energies towards that which we will have agreed upon, and stop retrofitting.
Fantastic.
And that's part and parcel of the difficulty.
Thanks, Sithole. Anne?
Look, I agree with what Sithole said, but there's another big issue which we need to start talking about, which is how much of the national budget is allocated to funding city infrastructure and other needs of our cities. Now, if you look at how this is done, the cities are collectively represented in the government budget forum on local issues, but they're not able to discuss the budget as a whole. And this is done by SELGA across all municipalities. So the metros don't actually have a voice in how our budget is allocated. So where are the largest cities' needs prioritized in the discussion on the national budget as a whole? And there is a reason why we are struggling to deal with the infrastructure of expanding cities, and that we suspect they're not getting sufficient resources.
Because they own revenue funding.
Getting money, but of course they should be claiming the money that they're owed, whether from government entities who tend not to pay their rates and taxes to individuals. And you can't run a city where all sorts of people aren't paying for what they use.
Yeah.
So we need to sort of, that's partly why we're saying we need to focus much more seriously on cities and the challenges facing the cities, and we need a lot more power and resources going to our largest cities. Because they're the heart of the economy.
To give them that voice at the table. So, Sithole,
can I make a slight correction? There is a forum which has been around now for about the 10 years that we have had of local government, 15 years around. There's a forum called the City Budget Forum. It discusses the budget. So it's a discussion between National Treasury and the big cities in particular about how those big cities need to be funded, which is one part of the solution. The problem, however, is that City Budget Forum focuses only on the budgeting and the support, financial support, I would imagine, of those cities. I think, Anne, I would hurriedly suggest that perhaps one of the things that we need to think about is how do we fund municipalities as a whole, not just talk about city budgets in the City Budget Forum. So what's the alternative way in which we must fund municipal governments so that we have a thorough understanding of what it is that we're trying to do?
Well, I think that's a good point to leave it off on. Unfortunately, we don't have more time. We really needed the full show to do justice to this report. There's so many other areas, the constitutional imperative for cities to provide an environment for social and social inclusion and economic growth. Whether or not we're delivering on that is, I suppose, debatable as well. And also, how we can rebalance some of the national policy agendas to promote urban-led growth, but it's always nice to leave a bit of powder dry. Thanks to my guests tonight, Sithole Mbunga, the CEO of the South African Cities Network, and Anne Bernstein, who's the director of the Center for Development and Enterprise, for your contribution to the debate on how we get cities to really be the catalysts and engines for growth, which the ratings agencies are looking for above all else in 2017. From me, Michael, producer Amor Klakla, and sound engineer Mdu Tele, thanks so much for tuning in. As always, have a wonderful evening.
Classic FM 102.7.